Over the hills, a state of mind inside your head. The first chapter is over. Now I'm going strong. I'm so ready for what's next, so bring it on. Yeah, here's to being 40.
I don't think you pronounce the I. It's Gervais.
Say that again.
Gervais.
Gervais?
Ricky Gervais.
I think you're
Richard Gervais.
No. If you're Southern, you got to say all the I's. So it's Ricky Gervais.
Today we are profiling Ricky Gervais on the This Is 40 podcast. And it's called The New 40. He's the co-creator of The British Office. And he's hosted Golden Globe Awards 1,000 times. Stand-up comic included in the 100 top most influential people in the world. And all of this after the age of 40. Gee whiz.
I literally think I have a crush on this guy, which is the weirdest thing, because his personality is so freaking amazing. Like, when you hear him talk, like, he's been stereotyped as this, like, you know, edgy, I'll say whatever, but, like, he's a really good dude with, like, a big worldview and complex, and he used to be in a band. Like, there's so much to unpack here, and he's in his 60s now, I think, and I feel like he's just, like, still youthful and young, vibrant.
His best 15 years were like from 40 to like 55. I get he's still doing fine, but I mean, it's like, yeah, his second chapter is he's just lighting it on fire. It's great.
That's it. So where did he get started at? I read that he wanted to go into science, that he went to school to do that, but then realized he really wanted to be in a band instead. And so he dropped science, you know, every mother's dream, and went into philosophy, because philosophy was less hours than science, so he could spend more time in the rock band.
I resonate with that story. I went through the same thing. But I think at that age, he's just a creative person. At that age, he was sort of throwing spaghetti at the wall. I guess he was into music and stuff like that. But he started this pop group in the 80s called Siona Dancing. All right. And I don't know what that means at all, but it sounds cool. Maybe it was cool in the 80s. I have no idea. But they were signed by London Records. It didn't hit in London, I guess, but they were big in the Philippines, apparently, which is what I tell people about my own career. Nobody's heard of me here, but I'm huge in Asia. You know? In high school, I was saying the same thing. It's just like, you have a girlfriend? Yeah. She just lives in the town next door there. you don't know her.
So I looked it up. Is it S-E-O-N-A?
Yeah.
Yeah, it means God is gracious, which is interesting because he is a hardcore atheist. Have you seen a photo of him when he was in this band?
No.
Anyways, like, I just felt like it was a completely different identity that he had. You believe that this was just shooting something in the dark, but I don't know. I had the feeling that this was actually something he was really, really passionate about. Kind of like Jack Black, like, really was into the music scene, and they got a little bit of traction, but it ultimately didn't work out.
Well, yeah, like, what creative person doesn't secretly want to be a rock star at some point, right?
What is it about it?
The glitz and glam and the attention and the adoration from tons of fans and the acceptance of your parents.
Which Ricky is actually very anti all of that. Like, not the parents part, but the fame. And I'm wondering, like, he's very outspoken about how he thinks the fame is ridiculous and people shouldn't go after that and stuff. And I wonder, if I was to psychoanalyze this, if it was because this didn't work out and he's just like, F it. F famous people.
Well, before we move on to the next part, tell me, expand on what you just said. So he's not after the fame, so he creates to create as opposed for the adoration?
He identifies now as a writer-director, not a performer. And he says that because when you present yourself in that way, people don't assume you're wanting to become famous. And he says the pursuit of fame, he just thinks, is completely ridiculous. Like, why would you do that? And I'm wondering, because I overanalyze shit, is that because he really wanted to be famous with his music and he got disappointed? And so now he has kind of a bitterness towards famous people.
I think he could say that now, but would he have said the same thing 30 years ago?
I don't know.
Obviously, your perception changes as you mature and stuff like that. But yeah, everyone in their 20s who starts a pop band probably wants to be famous.
Probably. Yeah. So he moves on with his life. I could not find anywhere that talked about, I mean, I listened to a ton of his interviews, all that, where he talked about the transition from music to writing. Maybe he was writing the whole time. Do you have any insight on this?
So in the 80s, he wanted to be the music guy. And then in the 90s, he got into comedy. So he was doing, like, stand-up comedy.
Come from? Who does that? Who's like, I'll just go into comedy besides you?
Your co-host does it. I know exactly what. Exactly. It happens. It happens to geniuses.
Okay.
So he gets into stand-up comedy in the 90s, and he starts doing like sketch shows and things like that. He actually started his own talk show, which inevitably failed, but he went into that kind of thing. He was just trying to find his voice at this point throughout the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, 1999 comes, and his buddy Stephen Merchant is like, hey, we should start a show called The Office.
Before we go into The Office, there was an interview with him talking about his writing process, and he said in elementary school, he started writing, and his English teacher told him to add details into your writing, because that's what makes good writers. And so he's trying to be a smartass, and was like, well, I'm just going to write the most boring-ass details that I possibly can in a paper. So his mom was taking care of this old lady. So he followed his mom around this afternoon and wrote down everything she did for this old lady, like the smells in the house and cleaning the carpet and all this stuff. And he handed it in like a smart ass to his teacher, like, here you go, look how great this writing is. And he got an A. And then he realized, he said, always the truth in writing is the most important thing, and that's what makes it good. And for him to have that realization in elementary school, I think it was like destiny. He'd end up writing something like The Office.
The truth was in the detail. Is that the idea here?
People relate to details. Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's what makes something honest. Because if I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, Rory's wearing this white V-neck t-shirt, seems a little bit tired, he's ready to go play pickleball and wishes Heather would shut up so he could move on with his afternoon. And, you know, it looks like it's his windows are drawn and there's no sun coming out or whatever. I could go on and on and on. Like, people can actually visually see that, and it feels more honest and real. Besides Rory sitting there looking at me.
Gotcha.
Don't you like this stuff? I mean, I think it's so interesting process.
No, you're right. And it's fun that you, and I think that's the whole part of the journey, is you pick up these tidbits along the way and then you just apply it to your next project. And then eventually it just compounds and accumulates and then it all comes together.
Yeah. So go on with The Office. What happened there?
1999, he makes his docu-soap parody with Stephen Merchant set in an office, but with the help from Ash Attilia, who is basically, it started out as this like 7-minute video called The CD Boss. All right. And that was just, I guess, like a little demo. And then Stephen Merchant, they passed this tape on to BBC's head of entertainment at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and then passed it to the head of comedy, who eventually commissioned it into a full pilot. So the takeaway from that, in my opinion, is like this. We profiled someone else where this happened as well, where it's like the thing isn't what takes off. It's like they pass that to someone who passes it to someone who passes it to someone. It's like the network of people that kind of launched this thing, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember who that was?
No.
Yeah, you know, we've profiled a lot of people at this point.
Oh, so many. And there's so many similarities that are popping up. I mean, even just with this bit that the thing we think is a thing isn't always going to be it, and your willingness to shift and pivot and adjust. You don't like The Office. I'm always going to bring that up because I just think it's an atrocity.
Like The Watchers. I just don't watch it. Is, you know what I mean?
No.
Oh. Well, the... But it wasn't even popular at the beginning. So they created the 6-episode pilot season of The Office. It didn't actually take off. It was the DVDs and this cult following that kind of made it into something bigger. And then I moved. It's like creating like a seedling that grew into a tree in England. And then they transported that tree into America to become Heather's favorite show ever.
Of all time. The character, which he said he originally wasn't going to play. I've only seen The Office, his office, and I've seen After Death. Is that what it's called? Have you seen
that? I think so. No, I've seen like Derek. I've seen a few other shows he's created, but never that one.
The other shows you've seen, is the main character kind of more harsh and very straightforward? And is he Ricky? Is the main character Ricky?
No, and Derek, he plays like a developmentally challenged person.
Oh, well, never mind.
It's actually a great series. But anyway, yeah, no, I get it though. He plays like that same character in a lot of different shows.
I just feel like that's his truth coming out. He's somebody who always wanted a voice, even though he's kind of edgy or whatever. And he always makes these edgy characters who say things people don't want to hear.
Right.
He writes characters in his own voice of who he actually is, back to the truth piece. Because he is someone who gets very bent out of shape about restraints and feeling politically correct. And he wants to be able to express himself fully. And so that's what he brings into his writing.
But isn't that what everyone brings into the writing? Like some sort of authenticity, or like any good writer, I guess, would draw from their own situation.
That's not his authenticity, is that he says things that are offensive to some people intentionally to make a statement that you shouldn't be offended by this.
I think he does that now. Like in his last special, he had like a lot of controversial things. And his take was hilarious. Like, I love comedians who can do that. They'll take something completely polarizing, but make you feel like an idiot for even being slightly offended by this topic.
I love him. I think he's brilliant. So he goes on to write more shows. I feel like he leads a pretty low-key life. I mean, he writes, he goes to LA a couple times a year, he does some award shows, but it's not like they're like hustling and grinding outside of Twitter.
Well, it's like there's never, it's not like there was one breakout role that just trajected him into whatever, right? But like, he creates so much content, and then he like The Office gave him this platform to showcase like his body of work, and he created like everything up to that point, right? And then he's got documentaries, he's got mockumentaries, he's got TV shows, podcasts, like any, he's like, you're gonna know who Ricky Gervais is on every single platform, no matter what. And
Ricky Gervais.
Listen to him say his own name and then you'll know what.
He has that British accent that can't understand everything.
But that's it. He was given like the golden, like, all right, you've had one success and now let's see what else he got. And then he just churns out stuff after stuff after stuff. And it probably has more failures than successes. If you look at people only remember the good stuff, right?
So pulling out of his life, what do you think is the main takeaway for us 40-somethings?
Well, regardless of whether The Office took off or not, I think he's just a consummate creative and he just keeps creating content, and the hopes that one of them took off, it just happened to have taken off, and that's the Ricky Gervais we know today.
Agreed. I like his bent on not worrying about fame and doing stuff that you just love to do because you enjoy doing it. It's a really refreshing approach. Really recommend listening to any of his interviews. I think he's a very insightful, kind human, despite the whatever he puts out front in the world.
I agree. I think collaboration is huge too. I don't do collaborative stuff enough. You know,
I feel like you do. You're very collaborative. I mean, look, what are we doing right here?
I'm trying to be. I've been a lone wolf for a long time, so I've been trying to collaborate with more folks because you're just basically leveraging their talents and personalities, and it's you're going to create a better product at the end of the day with other people's influence.
What do you ask yourself when you are looking to collaborate with someone?
Maybe what do I lack that they have, and therefore would fill that gap in the overall project? So you're looking at it from a project base as opposed to what do I get out of this kind of thing?
That's a really good insight. Anything else, Rory Stinkin' Gardner?
From Ricky Gervais.
You didn't even say. Do you like him?
Yeah. Again, like, it's not one of those things. I like him as an artist. I've seen him host the awards several times. I like his personality. I like his wit and stuff like that. But it's not like, who's your favorite actor of all time? Oh my God, let me tell you. You know what I mean? He's just like, he's there. He's brilliant and consistent. And, have you ever seen anything with Stephen Merchant, like the guy who co-created The Office?
No.
I think arguably he's funnier in TV shows and movies.
Really? Like
he's just got this goofy thing. He's 8 feet tall, I think. He's a very funny guy.
Did he make it after 40?
Probably. Assuming he's the same age as Ricky, I guess he probably made it after 40. I'm not sure.
So I put here that if you're born in 61, 1999 means you were 38. So if he started writing The Office at 38 or whatever, it makes about sense that probably after publishing, after, it's on TV, the telly, and it's on the telly, he was 40. Just like Steve Carell, which is really interesting.
There you go. So there you go. So what you're saying is you're 37, which means next year you're going to start writing your version of The Office.
I'm 36. I will be 37 in 1 month. And I don't know, the show's giving me a lot of hope because I'm thinking instead of me being old, I'm just almost there to the successful age. And if I'm not successful by then, I'm just going to be like, well, F this show. What are we doing here?
Do you enjoy everything you do? Based on the conversation we just had, like, he just creates stuff. He likes creating TV shows. He loves writing, and he can kind of put it all together. Do you think he was going through points where, like, I'm doing this just to get a pop so that I can release the stuff I actually want to release? Or, you know what I mean?
I don't think, from what I heard him say on interviews, I don't know the dude. I don't think that he ever wrote for anyone else other than himself. He genuinely... like, I even have like a quote here that he's making money. He's never understood why people were so bent over that. He said, I always just wanted to have a beer and be with my mates. I don't think he did anything other than what he wanted to do, which is very brave for a creative, right?
We could conclude it here.
Thank you. Appreciate you.